You're trying to be more open, right? More transparent. Well, it can be a very different way of doing business, and there are some significant cultural issues out there. That was the discussion point. That was the topic for a session yesterday at the Excellence in Government Conference, hosted, of course, by Government Executive. Moderating that panel, Tom Shoup, the Editor-in-Chief of Government Executive. He joins us now with insights. Hey, Tom.
Hey, Chris. Great to be back.
Nice to have you here, as always. So talk a little bit. It's interesting. I've always been fascinated by this transparency topic because this, to me, this is a little bit of a Rorschach word where everyone has a pretty different definition about what openness and transparency means.
Yeah, it is kind of funny that people tend to project what they want it to be onto it. And I think my sense is from the people who attended our conference and people who I talk to, within the federal government, there's just still a lot of confusion as to what it means and how to go about it. The interesting thing to me is that to the extent there is a definition, it tends to be, if you press people, the answer you tend to get is make data sets available,
right?
Which is a great thing. I'm not sure it entirely constitutes being transparent and open about government.
And part of, for me, this often means, you know, we've always known information is power, and what we've come to learn is that, well, traditionally information was power, so we kept it close to our chest. We didn't share it because that made us powerful. Well, what we're learning is, guess what? You share it, and everybody becomes more powerful. It really is this magical thing that happens, but that is so hard to do in practice.
Yeah, it really is. It takes a lot of time and energy and resources. And I mean, the good news is a lot of this is being done. There's a great deal of energy around this issue. So things are happening.
Yeah, there, and a lot of initiatives. And you had a great panel. You talked to Richard Boley, who's the director of e-diplomacy at the State Department. Mm-hmm. A lot of really interesting things going on there.
Yeah, they're really going sort of whole hog into adoption of social media techniques and using a whole range of tools to try to conduct diplomacy in new and different ways. So, and that's an example, I think, where it really is top-down driven from what I understand, that a lot of this is coming directly from Secretary Clinton, that, you know, she wants to promote this and has put key people in charge of these kinds of initiatives and given them a lot of free rein to do stuff.
Yeah, go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to say that there's a downside to that, too. I mean, they're seeing it. They've had officials get in a little bit of hot water with the Hill for things they're putting up on Twitter while they're on diplomatic missions to Syria, for example. Things are still taking place within the government context. And one part of the government context is there are people on the Hill who are always looking over your shoulder and, frankly, often looking for something that they want to consider to be controversial and want to drag you up and have a hearing about.
I got to tell you, one of my favorite comments about transparency came from the people who've really, I think, almost redefined or almost defined what transparency is. And those are the folks of the Recovery Accountability and Transparency Board, who lead recovery.gov, and their chairman Earl Devaney said to me one time, you know, if you get easily embarrassed, don't jump into transparency, because transparency, making data available, you're going to get embarrassed at some point. There's going to be some data set that you don't have perfect. Understand that's the idea. And of course, the
right.
Congressional districts on recovery.gov is the infamous one. Now corrected. It wasn't corrected before. We didn't even know that it was a problem.
Right. And how could you predict that people were going to essentially guess at what their congressional district was, or simply
right.
Put in incorrect information? And I mean, these are the things that are very difficult to tell up front. But one of the interesting things I heard, I think more than once yesterday at our conference, was from people saying, you know, if you're worried about the quality of your data, and that making it public is a way to improve the quality of your data. People will help you find errors like that in it if you're, you know, and if you're willing to be thick-skinned enough about it. And frankly, if people on Capitol Hill are willing to be relatively thick-skinned about it, it can be better in the long run.
Yeah. Well, sometimes they are. Sometimes they're the most secretive people out there. They want to tell you what you want to know, not really being transparent, and that's making some of the bad stuff available, too.
Right.
One of the other, and you talked to somebody on your panel, Linda How do you say her last name?
Lindy Kaiser.
Mm-hmm. She is a former social media manager for the Army Public Affairs Office. And she sort of brought to the point the famous phrase, loose lips sink ships. You know, there's a real concern that, hold on, if we're putting this out there, all of a sudden the bad guys are going to use this in a way that it becomes dangerous.
Yeah, and it's, you know, it's amazing what the Army in particular has done with this in saying, we're going to trust people. We're going to train people on what you should say, the kind of things you should say and the kind of things you shouldn't say, but then we're going to trust them. We're going to trust them to represent us well. And that is where a real sea change is occurring, I think, very slowly in government toward having that level of trust that people aren't going to abuse the freedom that they get to promote themselves and the work that their agencies are doing. Mm-hmm. But it's not an easy thing to do because, like I said, it only takes one staffer in Congress to say, that's a scandal and that's a hearing, and then things really get blown
and you can get
way up.
Yeah, people get in trouble and all of a sudden they're back into their... anyone talk about solutions of ways to making this, to doing this in a safe way, which I think is one of the big challenges?
There were varying things that various people from agencies had said, and I think that again that gets back to that question of leadership and really working across boundaries within agencies too, because the CIO shop has to be responsible for securing data. Somebody else may be responsible for the message, and it's really about those people working together to try to find ways that are both effective and workable and safe too.
Yeah, it's my experience is that oftentimes the senior leaders will get it in theory, although they're uncomfortable with it in practice.
Right.
Frontline folks, particularly, I'm going to say young people, although that's not really what I mean. What I mean is people who are inherently sharers, the more Web 2.0 folks, they get it, and mm-hmm. they have personal experience with sharing information and the power that comes from that information sharing. It's there's a clay layer, I guess, that are nervous about this and say, no, we're not doing it.
Yeah, and there are layers in which even when people aren't actively saying, hey, we're not comfortable with this, they're putting it through the same sort of bureaucracy that things always go through with government. David Roberts of the Labor Department said at one point, he may not want me repeating this, but he said, he works in communications, and he said, when I started on this job, I asked if I could set up a Flickr account. And 10 months later, I'm still waiting for an answer on whether I can do that. And I'm not so sure that somebody saying, we're not going to allow this, as somebody saying, well, if you have a request like this, it has to go through the following channels, and we'll get back to you when we have an answer for you.
Right.
I mean, there's just a lot of that in government that makes things slow.
Well, and this can be the situation where a CIO becomes a CIO, and all of a sudden,
right.
Guess what? People go around you. They'll just set it up at home and do it on their own. They don't, they're not going to wait 10 months to get this done. The famous story that I actually gave to Vivek Kundra, and now he tells it all over the place, which good for him. But TSA wanted to start their blog. They went to their IT shop and said, okay, we want to do a blog. And they said they could build a platform for like $70,000 or $125,000. And they thankfully went back and said, Blogger or WordPress or one of these free services out there? And luckily there was a good smart IT person who said, okay, well, we're going to make it happen. So, it's a new world and you don't have control. My sense is you don't have as much control these days. Better to do it in a safe way and figure out how to get it done.
Right.
I gotta ask you about this, Washington Post series, Top Secret America. Of course, it's, just buzz. Everyone's buzzing and you're doing, each day you're doing a review on the Fed blog. Give us your sense as to what are you taking away from this series? My takeaway is that, hold on, this is we always talk about too big to fail. This is too big to succeed.
Yeah, I think it is a basically stunning picture of exactly how big this is. And I would start by saying it is an amazing piece of work on the part of the Post. And
yeah, from a journalistic aspect, I think we sit back in awe of the amount of work that went into it.
and think, how did they free somebody up for 2 years?
Yeah, right.
But anyway,
I need a web story filed. Who filed the web story?
Exactly. So, they've really nailed down a lot of the stuff that I think people have been wondering about. And what was really starting to be, especially in the first days one, was, you know, just hearing people on the inside acknowledge, yeah, we don't really have anybody who knows just how big this is. And that is a very serious issue. We have an Office of the Director of National Intelligence, who I thought was supposed to be doing exactly. That's a fairly frightening portrait. And I think all of us had a sense that this is what's been going on since 9/11, that virtually no request to do something in the intelligence homeland security field has been denied. And this is what you end up with when you start going down that road. And when you combine that with, and this is something that really struck me today, like government, I mean, I don't know that there's anything more damaging to government than there has been over the past three decades of saying, listen, we just have to keep the civil service workforce capped at essentially where it is. And whatever else it takes to get the job done, you go get it somewhere else.
Yeah.
And we're not going to be any good at counting up who those people are and how many of them there are and exactly what they're doing. But we're not going to let you have much more in the way of civil servants.
And it seems to me we don't often have an honest discussion about what our needs are, and then say, okay, frankly, I don't care whether a contractor does it or a Fed does it. Whoever does it best, whoever can do it best, accomplish the mission most effectively.
Right.
And sometimes it'll be on either side. There's certain things that clearly Fed should do, some things that contractors should compete for, and there seems to be no real way of making those kinds of assessments right now.
Right. There really aren't. And it's more just sort of what makes us feel good about whatever we happen to be doing. So, you know, when they created TSA, it wasn't really rational to say these people need to be government employees. It just, to members of Congress and others, it just felt right. A, this is, you know, we want government people involved. We don't want to we don't want to take our chances with contractors, when I think you could make a pretty strong case that is the kind of function that you could contract out fairly effectively. So none of the decisions are really all that rational. It just sort of has grown up over this period of years into what is a pretty frightening picture right now.
Yeah, the map that they have of just the amount of places around, just really stunning. If you haven't checked it out, again, it's well worth reading, well worth your time. Tom Shoup is editor-in-chief at Government Executive. You can find more information about this topic. Of course, you just have to read his govexec.com/fedblog, so you can find it there. Of course, we have all the links, federalnewsradio.com/DoraBeckInsider, or just go to DoraBeckInsider.com. Tom, always a pleasure.
Great. Thanks, Chris.
Thank you, sir.